Hello, hello, you're listening to the Alfalfa Sprout 6ix9ine Rantcast, episode number 10. And in this episode, it's all about the Gibson Les Paul. There comes a time in your life where you require more than the meaningless vortex of spiral uncertainties, where desire, passion, and lust turn from fiction into obsession. The culmination in evident fact that it's time for this boy to become a man for the next step in evolution, commitment, and satisfaction. A driven force obtaining the ultimate in possessive excessiveness and to solidify the reality of owning a Gibson Les Paul. From a young age, a seed is planted in each potential guitar player for Fender or Gibson. The process may not be evident at the time, however, unknowingly as a young guitarist, you're shaping the sound of one heavyweight in the electric guitar manufacturer. When I think back to my first impressions of the electric guitar, the influences I've had, they were all in the realm of Fender or associated shapes and scale lengths. It's hard to believe that we're influenced at such a young time in our guitar development to lean towards one type of guitar. But in the end, it's amazing how much the beginnings shape our future. You could relate this to how much we end up like our parents, even if we don't want to admit it. But there is something magically musical that nudges us further towards one direction. For years I've been a Fender guy, but let me just get one thing straight. You don't need to own a Fender to be a Fender guy. What I mean is the basic shape of the guitars that I've always leant towards. There have been Telecasters or Superstrats with 25.5-inch scale lengths. So much that I became accustomed to playing the classic Fender scale length. Shorter scale length guitars felt incredibly alien to me. It wasn't until years into guitar when I even tried a Gibson scale length. But it just didn't feel right. I would always blame it on my hands being smaller and the necks being fatter. But that was honestly just an excuse. Small hands can be a bit of a hindrance, but children play guitar and some of them are incredibly talented. The few times I tried a Gibson Les Paul, I found it awkward at best, unbalanced, weird, and just uncomfortable. I've even spent a good half hour in a music store's amplifier room trying various Gibson Les Pauls and still didn't understand the obsessive desire people have. Even years after having a serious go of trying Les Pauls, I still had a bad attitude against Gibson, partly at the price, as here in Australia, selling your soul may only cover the first repayment. However, as I've grown older, my attitude in general has changed and I've aimed to be much less ignorant when it comes to opinions, knowledge and education. In order to prove to myself that I do dislike Gibson guitars once and for all, I needed to own a Gibson, not an Epiphone, not an Asian ripoff, not even an Australian ripoff or a replica. What I needed to own was a Gibson Les Paul. So as you heard from this intro, if you're new to the Alfalfa Sprout 6ix9ine Rantcast, this episode is dedicated to Gibson Les Paul guitars. And the reason being is that I have never owned one. I've never owned a shorter scale length guitar. When I say shorter scale length, I am referring to the Gibson Les Paul 24¾-inch scale length guitars. I have not been interested in owning one. I almost purchased a few guitars like that once, a few Ibanez guitars. I can't quite remember. I think they were the SZ models. But I've always stuck with the 25½-inch scale length guitars. Always been interested in Fender shapes. And not once have I been interested in Les Pauls. I decided to put an end to that and purchase a Gibson Les Paul. Here in Australia, if you want to buy a brand name guitar, you'll pay a lot of money for it. So that was one of the things that really put me off about buying a guitar, or any name brand guitar, really. However, I've come to a point in my life where I can't keep bagging out an instrument that I don't have any actual experience with. You know, you can go into a music store and try it all you want, but unless you own one, I guess, you know, you really don't get that proper feel for it. And for one, maybe they're not set up correctly in the music store, maybe they don't have the gauge strings you like, Who knows? Maybe the pickups suck. Who knows what it is? You know, maybe you just don't mention it. Sometimes guitars come off the production line and they're rubbish. It doesn't matter what name's on the headstock. So in order for me to evaluate my situation and why I dislike the guitar so much, why I bag them out every chance I get, I thought I'd take a more mature direction into looking at Gibson Les Pauls and buying one. So the vision I had for a Gibson Les Paul, if I was going to spend money on one, what I wanted to do is get one that I wanted. Now, Gibson do make a Les Paul, which is pretty much exactly what I want. It is called the Gibson Les Paul Gothic Monte, something along the lines of that. However, through my discoveries of doing research, I found out that there are two types of necks, and this is what I think has really hindered my experience. I don't like really fat necks. I don't like them at all. My hands aren't as big as most people's, I guess, so they feel a little bit uncomfortable to me. And it just came to my attention that most of the Gibson guitars, if not all of them I previously tried, had the 50-style baseball bat necks on them. Now, I know they're not terribly huge, but they do have a different profile. Now, the Gibson Gothic Morte guitar has a 50-style neck. And I tried one at the music store, and I still didn't like it. For a brief, I just picked it up, strummed a bit here and there, got a feel for it, and it just wasn't for me. But I like the way it looks. I personally like black guitars. Every guitar I own is black. And every guitar I'll own from now onwards will more than likely be black. It's a personal preference I have, and I just love black guitars. I'm not really big on colors at all. So the guitar I wanted was just a Gibson Les Paul Studio. I'm not big on binding, I'm not big on all that sort of stuff, and especially to just spend money on and try a guitar. So what I wanted was a Gibson Les Paul Studio in all black. Black hardware, black pickups, black everything I possibly can on it. And throughout some of my contact with the Six String Bliss forum, I found a seller on eBay that would sell basically guitar bodies and necks as parts. And a friend of mine from the forum, Clint Searcy, he showed me this Gibson Les Paul Studio as just as parts, as a guitar body and neck. No hardware or anything like that. So I thought, you know what? If I'm going to do this, this is the time. This is exactly what I wanted. A black, all black guitar. And it's a special model. It's actually the Les Paul Studio Gold Edition, so it would normally have gold hardware all over it. But one thing I do like about the guitar that I purchased, it's got the gloss top, but behind it, it's got a matte finish. So you don't get that, your hand doesn't stick to the back of the neck. It's got a matte finish, so it's almost like an unfinished neck, which I really prefer. I prefer that so much that on my acoustic guitar, which is I've got a gloss black neck on the back as well, painted, I took some wet and dry sandpaper to the back of that neck and started taking off the sheen so I would get that sort of unfinished feel. Now, in order to do this, I had to purchase the guitar, so I purchased the Gibson Les Paul, and a little bit of a background story. I purchased it as parts. It came into the country, it got inspected, it almost got fumigated, so I purchased it from the USA and got it for a fantastic price. I think I paid about $800-$900 for it, including postage. Now, you might think, if you're in the States, that's a lot of money for a studio. For parts, but here in Australia, that is an absolute bargain for a new guitar. So it came here, I was a bit disappointed, it did get inspected, but they didn't fumigate it, lucky for me. And I picked up the guitar and I looked at it and I was starting to get the appeal. But then, mind you, this is just a guitar with all hardware stripped, and it's got nothing on it. So what I did was I hunted down all the parts I could, all in black, of course. I already had pickups I wanted to put into it, and so I started that journey. So this was actually quite a struggle. It is almost impossible to find parts in Australia for a Gibson guitar with the imperial threads and type size screws and all sorts of things. It was quite a challenge, and I even went through. I'm on my third tailpiece, which thankfully, through a connection of Six String Bliss, I was able to get a genuine Gibson tailpiece because I bought two aftermarket tailpieces that don't fit I gather they'd be perfect for an Epiphone or Asian-style guitar with metric measurements, but on the Gibson guitar, it was shocking. Things didn't fit. However, I persevered and I bought many parts. I've got a small box full of parts that don't fit. Various screws, the tail pieces, box full of pots and that sort of thing. You know, finding the long shaft pots actually proved to be quite difficult. I put active pickups in this guitar and it was actually really hard to find long shaft active full-size pots. So I had to go with a smaller size, make up a plate to go inside it, much like Gibson do to mount all the hardware, and then attach to the guitar that way. So I went through a lot of hassle to get this thing together. And I decided on a few parts with a few recommendations from people on forums and a few friends of mine. So let's talk about the end result. Now, the end result is a completed guitar. It's strung with 10 to 46s, which I normally use on Fender style guitars, which does feel a little bit more slinkier, a little more lighter. It does help with bends and that sort of thing. But it seems to be working really well. The guitar stays in tune and seems to play quite well. So from top to bottom, I'll talk about the parts that I purchased and maybe a brief explanation to why. At the top with the tuners, so I went for the Tone Pros Klusen Deluxe All Black Tuners. The reason I bought these is because they're a direct replacement, and Gibson on the back of the peg head have two little set screw holes. I was originally going to buy black Grover tuners because I really like Grover tuners in their 18 to 1 gear ratio. However, it just didn't seem to be the best idea to put it together. One of the other reasons why I didn't think it was a good idea to use Grovers is because then I would have a big hole on the back of each tuner post, because Grovers only have one set screw. Now, I know I can fill it. I can sand it down, make it flush, probably repaint the back, and no one would ever know. But I did buy parts, keeping in mind that if I absolutely hate this guitar, I will sell it. So I decided to go with those Klusen tuners. The only thing I don't like about them, which I don't understand, is the fact that for some reason, the tuning keys are this black perlarized material, plastic material. And if you want to buy all black parts, why on earth do they not have black tuning keys? It boggles the mind. So anyway, I went with these tuners and they're about a 14 to 1 gear ratio. They're actually quite nice. They're lighter than Grover's and they work really well. They keep it in tune. They're not locking tuners or anything like that. They're just a deluxe version of Klusen style black tuners. Going down to the guitar, I was going to buy a new nut, but it's got the Gibson Carina nut in there. I may get a black tusk nut or tusk, whatever it's called, and from Graftech. Put that in there just because it's black. Or if I do feel the need, an Ivana nut, may as well try one of those out, and they're black. So heading towards the body of the guitar, I did manage to find black pickup curve pickup rings from All Parts, all black screws, the right type of screws. I even found the smaller black screws for the control cavities in the sort of Gibson smaller size. All the right type of screws I found. Even the right screws for the truss rod cover. Speaking of the truss rod cover, it did come with the gold Gibson bell-shaped truss rod cover. I was looking for one that said studio, but I couldn't justify paying $40, $50. Some of them were cheaper, but they weren't genuine online, so I wasn't interested. So all I did was put a bit of carbon fiber wrap over the gold truss rod cover, which turned it into black, and then put that back on the guitar. So back to the hardware. All the hardware is black. I found the correct slanted pickup rings, which seemed to work really, really well. And there was very minimal modification I had to do with the curved top of the guitar. And then I went on to getting strap buttons. I replaced it. It had gold Gibson strap buttons on there, which were tiny. I replaced those with Dunlop Dual Design strap lock buttons, and they work really, really well. I really like those strap buttons. I use them with all of my guitars. And then I decided to get a jack plate from, it's a Goto black jack plate, curved as well, that fits perfectly. Switchcraft jack in there, stereo jack. And I ended up getting the pots, the 25k pots were really hard to find. Luckily, a good friend of mine, a friend of the Bliss, luthier Steve Benford of Benford Guitars, had some that he managed to send to me from America, so thank you very much. So I put those in, and I just got the regular black speed knobs that are on most, or a lot of Gibson guitars. They're aftermarkets from Guitar Fetish. I managed to put in my set of Seymour Duncan Blackouts pickups, the AB1 set. Really nice set of pickups, very loud pickups, but they sound really good, real killer. I really like them, so they seem to sound pretty good. I do like passive pickups a lot, but I had those spare, so I just threw them in the guitar. And from then on, I went to the bridge. Now, what bridge was I going to get? I finally found a Tone Pros roller bridge in black. And I was a little skeptical if it would fit, but I bought it with the smaller posts for Gibson-style guitars and put it straight in. Fit perfectly. Absolutely fantastic. Then I went to the tailpiece. I went through two tailpieces from Guitar Fetish. They didn't fit. They said they were for Gibson guitars. They didn't fit at all. Luckily, a friend from the Bliss tracked down a genuine Gibson brand new part for me and sent it to me from America. So thank you, Clint. I put that on there, fit perfectly. Went straight on, not an issue at all. Some other things I tried to replace, it did come with cavity covers, and I just thought I'll purchase some because they were cheap. None of them fit. Looks like they're for Epiphones as well. They don't fit like the Gibson ones do. The quality isn't as great as the Gibson cavities. They're not as thick, and they don't fit as well. Not as well at all. So I just used the plates I had. I did plan on putting a battery box on the control cavity plate, but I came up with a better idea, which I've got all the electronics mounted on a piece of Perspex, which is the same shape as a control cavity that goes inside there. The battery mounts so that everything's on plugs, like the EMG Quick Connect system, and it can pull things in and out easy. I can strip the guitar in 10 minutes if I really, really wanted to. Of electronics, that is. Now, in saying that, so I've got all the parts, everything went on, and this took a long time. This took months to track down all these parts because I wanted them in black. And I believe if you have a desire, you have a passion for something, make it happen. You know, if it's in within your means, go for it. So I eventually got all these parts together, and the moment of truth came. I got a set of strings, brand new set of Ernie Ball Slinky strings, 10 to 46. I strung it up, set the bridge height, and went to set the intonation. And the strangest thing happened. It was intonated perfectly. I didn't have to adjust the neck. I didn't have to wait for it to sit and settle or anything like that. Mind you, this guitar didn't have strings on it for a long time, didn't have any hardware on it. I even bought the correct truss rod adjustment wrench, the Gibson-style one. I believe it's actually a Gibson one. So I could adjust the nut inside the truss rod, or end of the truss rod at the neck. So I didn't have to do any of that, which is really, really strange. The Tone Pro's bridge came preset, basically, preset, like pre-adjusted for intonation. And it's the weirdest thing. It intonates perfectly, really strange. So I got the guitar. And my first impressions of the guitar when it was complete. Exactly what I wanted. Oh, I forgot to mention about the selector switch. It's all black switch. Nothing special about that. Pick up select switch. What they call the poker chip. I got a few of them, which say, what's it, rhythm and treble. But they were aftermarket and they weren't that great. So I just stuck some carbon fiber film over that as well. Just keep it black. So it doesn't have any markings. Now, the first impressions, when I finally put it together, it was like an incredible weight was lifted off my shoulders. It was such an effort to find all the parts in black, to get things that fit. I was so disappointed when I bought parts that said they were for Gibson Les Paul, and they just did not fit. They were obviously for Epiphones. But once I got it together, and then I actually started playing it, it was quite a day, quite a joy, actually. It really was. However, It wasn't a great experience. This guitar is heavy. When I say heavy, I mean heavy. The thing weighs like 9.5 pounds. It is heavy. And because of the shape of the body, if you're right-handed and you put it on your right leg when you're sitting down, it wants to fall off. You can't play it that way unless you really dip the head down, and then it's just awkward. So I even try now. I normally play in more of a classical approach. I'm right-handed. I play with my guitars when I'm sitting down on my left leg. I find it more comfortable. It keeps your back straight. And when you stand up to play, it's not as much of a transition, so you can still play when you stand up. So I tried to play like that as well, but the guitar was still too heavy. It was still sliding off my legs. I found myself supporting it a lot with my hands, which was hindering my playing. So at that point, I thought to myself, you know what? I don't know if I want this. I'd spent all this time putting it together, put so much effort, spent quite a bit of money, actually. Not as much as it would have cost to buy one new. Put together, and that's got the wrong colored hardware, the wrong type of pickups and everything for me. You know, you might think they're the best things in the world. Personally, it's my personal preference. As I said, black guitar, made for metal, active pickups. And I thought to myself, geez, this thing is heavy and uncomfortable. So I put it down for a bit and thought about it. So then what I do, this is what I do with all of my guitars when I sit down. I actually sit down and I play with a strap. I always do that just in case I have to have my hands free, and always holds them into a better position so that you're not supporting the guitar with your hands, and it gives you more control. So I decided to strap it up, put it the right length, sat down with it. And at that moment when I strapped it up, my goodness, it was heavy, like really heavy. I'm standing up playing this thing. However, in saying that, what I loved about it is the fact that because it's so heavy, the neck never dips down. It's in the same position all the time. So I sat down and played it like that and got a feel for it. The guitar stays in the position and I was able to play it. I was at first jumping all over the fretboard, especially when you go to the higher frets. I just couldn't play it properly. There must have been something wrong with how my brain was wired with Fender scale guitars, because it just wasn't happening for me. So it took a while. It took a good week to get used to, which I know is a long time. It did take a good week to get used to the scale length. So what I did was I decided to play the Les Paul exclusively. So for the past couple of months, I've only been playing the Gibson Les Paul. It's only recently that I started picking up my Benford again and the Schecter guitar, to start playing a few tunes here and there. But I did start playing the Gibson Les Paul exclusively, and it was an experience. It really was an experience. But I started to get used to the guitar. I really, really did. And to be quite honest, it was a decent experience. It's very different. Now it's a very different guitar. Your picking hand is rather high off the guitar. The body's a lot thicker than what I'm used to. Like the scale length, the shape of the neck. Constantly worrying that if I hit the neck, it's going to snap off. But it's very different. So I've been exclusively playing the Les Paul. I learned a new song on it, start to finish, which I don't often do, because as a recording musician, as we are at home, a bedroom musician, you don't play songs all the way through. Play what you need to play, then you piece it together. But yeah, I started playing it, and it started to get a lot easier to play. I managed to get the action down real low. It does buzz a little bit on the low E, so I could probably raise it up a touch, but when you plug in, you can't hear it. And I started getting a bit of a feel for the guitar. So what are my final impressions on it? Well, you'll just have to wait and see. Because what I've got coming up for you now is a song. This song is played, all the guitar parts are played on the Les Paul. I just put this together as quick as I could. Not really worrying about quality of the drums and bass and all that sort of stuff, but everything you hear in the guitar are all performed on the Gibson Les Paul. So hope you guys enjoy it, and I'll chat to you after the song.
Bye. sky was dark this morning. Not a bird in the trees. Silence hung suspicious and anxious like a blanket covered screen. You were gone. Searching, crying desperately. I look into their eyes, I see the faceless crying, save me, save me, save me. What are they to feel?
So throughout that song, I used a few plugins as well, used Guitar Rig 5, which I think is great. It's all the free stuff. And I used a Black Star amp there, reamped a lot of the sounds just to get what I wanted out of it. And you know what? I think it sounds pretty good for just a quick put together rough sort of song. It's one of my favorite songs by the band Fuel. It's called Sunburn off their first album. Well, it's not their first album, it's their first commercial album. One of my favorite songs that I wanted to play for a long time and didn't play it all the way through. One thing about the solos in it, you're doing 1.5 tone bends, and playing it on the Gibson guitar scale length, it just made it so much easier, so much more control. It just seemed to really, really work really well. The lead guitarist in the original lineup of Fuel plays Gibson Les Pauls. So I had to be doing something right with playing that song. However, I hope you guys enjoyed that. But before I give you my final thoughts on this guitar, you will actually get a little bit more of my final thoughts. I'm going to play an interview. What I've got coming up for you is something a little bit special. This is an interview with a good friend of mine and member of the Bliss community, Mr. Sean Hudgel. Sean had a similar experience, although he had quite a... Well, I'll let you listen to his experience. Now, it's a nice story that Sean's telling us about his experience with wanting to own a Les Paul. He had the same desire, well, a similar desire. I mean, guitars, you know, they're... Gibson Les Pauls are absolutely iconic, and you wonder why everyone wants one, so you want to experience that too. So here's Sean's story about it. I interviewed Sean a little while ago, so I hope you guys enjoy it, and I'll come back to you after the interview. Check it out, guys. It's Alfie, aka Alfalfa Sprout 69 from the Six String Bliss forums, and I'm coming to you at this segment with a very special segment for our Gibson Les Paul episode. I'm here with special guests, and I'd like to introduce him as Mr. Slippery Fingers. Would you like to introduce yourself?
My name is Sean Hudgel. I'm currently coming to you from Yangsan-si, South Korea, and just so excited to be part of your podcast, Alfie. Tell me, how did you choose the number 69 after your podcast?
Well, it's ignorant adolescence, I'd have to say. That's the only real reason for that name.
Well, it reminded me of the Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. They make fun of that number in that movie as well.
One of the things, though, one of my favorite bands from the 90s is Fuel. And the lead guitarist always had a 6-9 on his Gibson Les Paul. And I didn't really think much of it, but it always stuck in my mind, that number. So, yeah, but a good movie, Bill and Ted. Fantastic movies.
It's very funny.
So I was going to ask Sean, this is the Les Paul episode, Gibson Les Paul episode, and I've recently had my Gibson Les Paul completed, but I wanted to get your views on a Gibson Les Paul. I understand that you own a very special Les Paul, and wanted to know, firstly, what made you decide to buy a Les Paul, and you can give us a bit of a backstory on how you decided to purchase it.
I'd love to. It might be a bit long-winded, so stop me if you need to. But I'm sort of began my guitar journey as a kind of an acoustic guy, and sort of thinking that someday I would learn to play electric, and eventually I came to that by listening to, I think where we came together was listening to the Six String Bliss podcast, and there I sort of found the want or need to play the electric guitar, and this was back in 2010, and being where I am, I have a very limited choice of guitars that I can choose from, and so I found myself going to the United States for a brief period of time, and thought, what kind of guitar would I like? And you know, I almost instantly decided that a Les Paul would be the only answer, and I looked around, and they all were kind of the same to me. And that sort of, maple top and mahogany back and, you know, two pickups. And it was all pretty much the same. There were no special Les Pauls to me. So I started looking around on a very famous guitar retailer's website who sells used guitars in Nashville. And I felt very safe there because, you know, this guy has a very... great reputation as a retailer for not only, you know, regular folk like me, but you know, the superstars of America. So I purchased a fairly expensive Les Paul there. I got the Les Paul Supreme, and the reason I got it is because the back was carved, and the back had no plastic plates, and the back had the tiger stripe maple on it as well as the front. So the back looked like the front. It was quite beautiful. So, I thought, wow, this has got to be the guitar for me. So I looked at the rating. By rating, I mean the condition of the guitar, how it was rated by the person who was selling it. It said it was near mint. So I took that to sort of mean that it was almost perfect. And I bought the guitar for too much money. And when I got it, it was far from mint. It was filthy. Filthy and dirty and had rusty strings on it. And the gold plating was all sort of crusty and worn out. And there were scratches and belt buckle rash on the back of the guitar. And it really ruined the effect of the back being as beautiful as the front. And although I was crushed and I would have happily returned the guitar, I had to be on the airplane to South Korea the next day. So I couldn't return the guitar. So I just sort of had to take it with me. And thus began my Les Paul journey.
My goodness, I had no idea it was to that extent. That's terrible. From that, and I know the reputable dealer that you're talking about. We won't name and shame anyone here, but that's it. It's almost like a fantasy, isn't it? That it was that poorly conditioned. Because when people say near mint condition, I'll presume it's almost brand new, or the likes of.
That was my understanding as well.
So you ended up having to take it with you. You know, you've got to get your flight.
I had to get on the plane, so I brought it back to South Korea with me, and I got lots of skeptical looks from my wife, who thought it was an astronomical amount of money to pay for a guitar to start with, and then when she saw the condition of the guitar, she was fairly disappointed in my choice. So I sort of lived in shame for years after that, and kind of tried to play it, and you know, it just never sounded good. I never could. My acoustic was just so much better. You know, and I thought it was me. You know, it was my ability. Something somehow that I had the wrong equipment or my skill set wasn't good enough to make it sound good. And then I had the fortune to come upon buying a Steve Benford full custom guitar. And I think you're aware of who Steve Benford is and what he does and. When I got his guitar sounded really, really, really good. Suddenly, the same songs I was playing on my Les Paul sounded good, and I couldn't understand. So there I was, and that started me off on this little journey of how can I make my Les Paul better? And the first thing that I was sort of disappointed with was the finish, and it was scuffed and scratched and dented and... But nothing so serious, and I did a little research about how to wet sand and buff, so I completely stripped the guitar down and started with 600 grit sandpaper and went all the way up to 3,000 grit sandpaper wet sanding, and then I buffed it out by hand, and oh my God, it was beautiful. It was so pretty, and I think I got the original effect that the guitar was intended to have.
That's quite amazing because seeing the pictures on the Six String Bliss forum are unbelievable. Like it looks absolutely beautiful. I've never seen a flame maple, or I should say back, as quite as attractive as yours. You know, but just to know that you went from 600 to 3,000, that's wow. That would have been an amazing amount of work. It would just have been absolutely killer.
I did it slowly over a period of 6 weeks.
So did it, and it finally got to it got to the look, didn't it? It got to the look that you were happy with.
Right, right. So the look, it looked good. It looked good. Everyone, oh, wow, your guitar is beautiful. And then, but the sound was still fairly pathetic. So I read a lot about them. You know, I read about all of my guitar heroes, and I know you're not too fond of some of the guys like I know you're not too fond of Led Zeppelin, but you know Jimmy Page was always one of my heroes, even as a teenager. And you know he had two 59 Les Pauls that he played a lot. And I started noticing all of my guitar heroes were playing, you know, save Jimi Hendrix, were playing Gibson Les Pauls. So I couldn't sort of add up the reason why their guitar sounded so wonderful. Take away the ability. I'm not a wonderful electric guitarist. I just am a guy. But there was still no reason in my mind for my guitar to sound so bad. And that's when I started getting into the whole romance of how to wire and the pickups and the gauges of the wires and capacitors and the values of the potentiometers and down to the wrapping, the insulation and wrapping of the wires and how much shielding should occur and all of these things sort of became kind of a religion for a while. And actually still are. You're going to laugh when I tell you this, but just in the past 2 weeks, I've decided to redo it again. I want to add something different to it. But I think probably the biggest thing that held me back was this sort of myth that I would love to dispel here on your podcast today. And it is the myth of collector value. I believed that my guitar was something special, and if I so much as took a knob off of it, that I would lose the collector provenance of my special guitar. And after I asked a lot of people online and around, it's pretty obvious that if you have anything made after 1965, it's just not that special. It's not going to increase in value anytime soon. So when I ditched that idea of collector value, then I was able to go on my way. And the first thing I did was I got rid of I got involved in that whole tailpiece struggle where, we try to decide whether to send the strings through the tailpiece or wrap them around, this guitarist does that and that guitar, I started getting involved in that whole, so I changed my mind and I got the Gibson TP6 tailpiece, which is commonly found on the ES, 135s and 335s, that it's sort of a fine-tuning tailpiece that they use for jazz guitars. And I was really happy with that. So that was a good choice for me. So after that, I thought, I'm just not going to stop. I'm going to keep on. So I got myself some pots and some capacitors and a variety of capacitors. We've talked online several times about that. And
definitely.
Yeah. So I got involved in that whole thing too. What am I going to do there? And as soon as I decided to do that, I decided I would also get some new pickups as well. So I ordered up some potentiometers, some CTS potentiometers, and some Lux capacitors, and the cloth wrapped wire, and I got the Gibson, not the Gibson, but the Seymour Duncan Pearly Gates pickups. And when I open the guitar up, you have to do the wiring through the jack port. The jack plate is oversized and it's a big port, and all the pots have to fit through that to eventually insert into the top of the guitar. So when I opened it up, I found a pretty disgraceful wiring job. The reason my guitar wasn't sounding good is because two of the joints on the tone pots were cold soldered and had popped off. So naturally the tone wasn't working at all. So then I found the pickups. The pickups were supposed to be 490Ts and 490Rs from Gibson, and they weren't at all. One was a 498, which is actually supposed to be a better pickup, but I guess what I'm trying to say is they said they would be certain specs, and they weren't at all. It was just, it looked like whatever Gibson had laying around that day. And that sort of really, then I thought to myself, collector value, I'm so sure. So their specs weren't at all what they said they would be. So the pots were 300 on the volume, 300 what, megs?
K, kilo ohms.
300K. 300K pots for the volume control and 500 for the tone. And I've since found out that's a regular thing that they do, but no one says why.
I think they just got whatever they could at the time, to be quite honest.
The pickups were cut in half, and then they had these huge gobs of solder on them, like they were removed from one guitar to put into another. And I know your electronic background, you're going to laugh at me when I say this, but the capacitors were smaller. They were tiny. They were They were infinitesimal. They were the size of small pieces of candy. And I just couldn't imagine them sounding as good as the big bumblebees that I saw in the Peter Green 59 Les Paul or the Eric Clapton, the Beano Les Paul had bumblebees and on and on. So, you know, I decided to go through that whole thing. And lo and behold, when I rewired it and put the new pickups in it, it sounds wonderful. It sounds like I imagined a Les Paul would. So that's my story.
That's amazing. I mean, the amount of effort you went through just to have a Les Paul, just to get it to sound like the way it's meant to from the factory. And like you were saying, when I saw those pictures on the forum of how the gobs of wire were joined to those pickups, how they were trimmed really short, my jaw dropped and I thought, what on earth is going on here? I mean, what kind of pickups are? To me, it looks like someone's replaced them somewhere along the way and they've just done a dodgy job because it looked terrible. That, I mean, I've heard bad things about Gibson's factory, and looking in my Les Paul, the cavities are shocking, but not like that. I mean, that's atrocious. I felt for you when I saw those pictures. I couldn't believe it. I thought, this isn't right. But I guess the moral of the story is that Sean really wanted this type of guitar, and what I think is admirable is that you stuck with it. You know, you did everything you could to make it sound good, and you know, the amount of the parts that Sean got, the amount of effort that you put into it is quite amazing. And then soldering as well, because I understand that you're not really that used to soldering, but you did.
That was my first project.
What I saw was a pretty amazing job for a beginner. You should have seen the rubbish I was doing when I first picked up a soldering iron. But I don't think it was any better than what came out of your guitar. But for anyone out there that doesn't know what Sean's talking about with a Gibson Les Paul Supreme, you really have to look it up to admire this guitar's beauty, but you really have to check it out to find out how the wiring is installed in this. It's quite, in my mind, it's like the guitar's beautiful because it's got the carved back, but it's absolutely ridiculous how you have to wire this thing through. It's almost like the ES335s where you have to go through the F-holes. Luckily, it's got an oversized output jack cavity where you feed everything in, so you could just imagine the difficulty, like the level of difficulty it takes someone to actually wire this up and neatly as well. So, you know, I can really commend Sean on a really good job of wiring it up. Really looks quite good. But I know what you mean. I've rewired every one of my guitars except for my Benford, just because I like it to be neat.
Oh, the Benford. Oh.
But it's much like you, Sean. When I got my Benford full custom, I was blown away with how easy it plays, how comfortable it is, how unbelievably fast the neck is. I mean, and I've got Ibanez RG shred guitars, you know, and they've got nothing over it, nothing. It's just unbelievable. And when you hear about a Gibson Les Paul, I mean, to me, like, I always heard good things.
It's iconic, isn't it? It's iconic. You think there's nothing better, right?
And yeah.
Sadly, that was not the fact for me.
I mean, it's the best of the best as far as people are concerned. You know, a Gibson, you've got to have a Gibson. You know, you have to have a Gibson. But it's just a shame that, you know, Sean, unfortunately, you were, you know, you didn't get the guitar you desired. But I guess the moral of the story is if there is something that you love, you know, don't give up on it, because as long as it's a decent piece of wood, it's definitely has potential. And it's not fair that you had to spend all this extra money. It's not fair that you have to put all this extra effort. But then again, the way I look at things is that you've personalized the guitar. You've put in your own efforts. You know, you've put in your own blood, sweat, and tears. Therefore, it makes it even more special now. Do you think that's a good analogy of it, Sean?
I totally agree. In fact, what I tried to do now. You're really going to laugh at me now, I think. Well, maybe you won't, but I kept looking at all those wiring diagrams from all the different guitars, but the ones that really attracted me were the 50s era wiring that you may see, like the Beano Les Paul and the Peter Green from Fleetwood Mac's Les Paul, and even later you hear... Well, I think Billy Gibbons from ZZ Top does it, and Many guitarists, either have a 59 burst, is what they're called, or aspire to have it by finding the right pickups and the right capacitors. But people focus on those two items more than anything else for the sound. Now, I knew I could never get, 50-0 PAFs to go on my guitar. That wasn't even something I attempted to do, but I knew I could get a better sound than I had. And I just became totally convinced. I was doing research for a song that I was trying to learn to play, and I was watching Canned Heat play at Woodstock, and they were playing On the Road Again, and he's playing a 52 gold top Les Paul. Brian Blind Owl Wilson is playing a 52, and keeping in mind for the time, there's no effects, there's no stomp boxes, they're just playing. And the sound coming from this guitar was phenomenal. It was incredible. And the thing is that even Les Paul considered that tailpiece assembly is inferior. And when you hear that guitar playing, it's just breathtaking. And I had to shoot for something higher than what I had.
Dude, I mean, that's the same impression I got. I mean, you hear these people, they're playing these guitars, and granted, a lot of them are genuine 50s Les Pauls, but their tone is just absolutely amazing. It's huge. It blows. It'll chop your head off. And I'm just, because seeing that, it really makes you want the guitar. I was really against Gibsons for a long time because I tried them with the 50 style necks, and I didn't know what people were on about because I've got tiny little hands. I can't grab the neck. but it's true. But you hear so many of your heroes, so many guitar heroes, so many absolutely iconic songs, iconic music and tones that people play a Gibson Les Paul, and that's what you want. I never thought I'd get a signature guitar, but here we are.
Here we are. You're right.
With Les Paul's signature. Yeah, not playing in the style of Les, but it's definitely, I always dislike them just because people really try to push me to buy one, but you know what? They're really good guitars. I know they've got a lot of design flaws that, in modern day sort of specs, you'd think, why on earth would you do that? But they're really well-playing guitars, very different with a shorter scale neck, and I'm in a bit of the same camp as Sean, not to the extent that Sean was in, but my one I bought as parts, and I was willing to go through anything to get it together to know what it's like. But so Sean, as the journey came to a conclusion of getting a guitar that sounds the way you want it to sound, plays the way you want it to play, what's your experience with the Les Paul now? How are you feeling with the guitar?
I'm not going to bore you with words like creamy and plays like butter or any of that stuff, but I can say that without a doubt, for my limited ability to play an electric guitar, that the tone is much better. We could give a percentage rating. I could say 100% better, but really it's remarkable and notable. I had someone ask me, well, did you record the crappy sound and then the new sound? And I didn't on purpose, because I thought to myself, here's this guy who his first soldering job for a crappy thing that he thinks maybe, and he doesn't even play electric guitar so well, and of course it's going to sound better to him, right? It better, because I've invested all this money in trying to make it sound better. So the evidence would become somewhat anecdotal, I think, and that's not where I wanted to be either. But having said that, it sounds a lot better, and makes me understand that. It makes me embarrassed that I was hoodwinked by a retailer, and B, that I was so trapped by that collector value wording that kept me from repairing the. And I really emphasize that word, repair, the dysfunctional guitar that I had, and now that it's repaired, I'm not ashamed of it anymore, and I reach for it as often as I reach for my Benfords. So it's improved my life, Alfie.
I agree. It's Like I said, I was never a Gibson person, never a Les Paul person. Here in Australia, I thought they're absolute waste of money, way overpriced. Why would you want one? But owning a Gibson Les Paul now, and I have to emphasize to everyone, people say that, you know, why buy a Gibson when you buy an Epiphone? For me personally, this was a necessity for me to own a Gibson. I'm not interested in Epiphones. I'm not saying they're bad guitars, but I needed to find out what a Gibson Les Paul was like. I don't need any other knockoffs, any other copies. I don't need anything that's the same scale length. I don't need an ESP that I know is going to play amazing and be fast and have the tummy cut. I want a Gibson Les Paul guitar. And granted, I have a studio. I've got it from the extreme end of what Sean has. But it's a genuine Gibson Les Paul. And you know what? I have to, cut myself off from all the negative things I said in the past, because they are great guitars. I know people are going to be surprised that I said that. I'm a 25 and a half inch scale length person. No, I love Telecasters. I love Telecasters till the day I die. You know, I love Super Strat Shredder guitars, but playing this Les Paul and getting used to it, it's just a different experience, and it's a really positive experience. It really has changed my views. You know, I was pretty arrogant about Gibsons, and you know what? They're fantastic guitars. It's a solid guitar, never goes out of tune, plays well, easy to bend strings, and I've been playing it exclusively, so I've been getting used to it. To prepare for this episode, and two, to prove to myself that, you know, that I was wrong and that they are fantastic guitars. And I was a little bit skeptical as well, you know, because I bought mine as parts. I thought it was a counterfeit.
I remember that.
No, and it's a studio, so they're not exactly the same. Yeah, I went through great detail. I went to a music store to ask them if they can look at it for me. Unfortunately, it was a bad experience, and that put me off a little bit. It sort of ruined the experience for me. But I persevered. I bought many, many parts that didn't fit because they're not Imperial. They're all metric, the Asian guitars. I've got a whole box full of parts that don't fit.
As do I. I've got three roller bridges, just to find the right one for the TP6 tailpiece. But I found it. Mention.
You found it, yes.
Yes, I've got it. It's on the guitar.
Yeah, not to mention, of course, me being me, I wanted everything to be black. Then I've got a couple of extra parts of black parts that don't fit. Once it was together and I played it, it was just amazing, absolutely amazing. I know I'm an active pickup guy, and I've got Seymour Duncan blackouts in it. You know, people say, oh, they all sound the same in the guitar. Well, you know, that's personal preference, but you know
that's
what?
True.
It absolutely screams. And it, you know what? It sounds better than the Ibanez RG full mahogany body that I had those pickups in. It sounds way better. It's just a really good experience, and I urge anyone out there, if you have any negative thoughts of Gibson and so forth, go out there and try one in a music store. Go out there and see if you can get one cheap online or something like that. I got a good deal with mine, which is one of the reasons I bought it. There's no way I could get it for the price I got it in Australia. You have to mortgage half of your house to get a Gibson guitar in Australia.
Yeah.
But
Same here in Korea. It's two-thirds more than the retail price from America.
Wow. Yeah, that's about right in Australia. Yeah, Australia, the retail for my guitar is on the Gibson website is $1,199. I think it is around $1,200 or $1,300. In Australia, it's $3,000.
Yeah, that's about right. The same here.
And, unfortunately, people like Sean and I, we have to pay these extra prices. And even Sean being in South Korea, it'd be a little more difficult to find American-made guitars, I believe you were explaining before once on a six-string bliss post.
Yes, Alfie, I live in Guitar Hell.
Oh, no. It's only been in the last sort of five, ten years in Australia that you could really get a lot of guitars. I remember when I started, music stores didn't have much. I mean, they had Fenders and Gibsons, but, I mean, we're talking $6,000 guitars, you know, for standards, Les Paul standards. And that was in the 90s. Like, that was, you know, so the dollar was worth more. The equivalence to the Australian dollar now, cost of living was different. So it's just amazing. But I do urge people out there to try Les Pauls. You know, I am 100% converted to Gibson Les Pauls. I really like it. You know, I really love the guitar. Another reason I love it is because I put it together the way I wanted it to be. I wanted a studio. I didn't want a standard because I think the binding is a bit of a bit excessive for the price you pay in Australia.
And see, I'm the opposite. I love the binding.
But and I wanted it to be all black. You can't buy it. Well, you can. There's one called a Gothic Monte or something like that, but it's got the 50 style neck. You can't buy what I have off the shelf. I had to make everything black, put those pickups in it, and you know, do it that way.
And it's now your guitar. It's your signature guitar.
Yes. Yes, it is.
Yes, that's what I'm getting at. That's why we should completely ditch this whole idea of collector value and make our personal instruments our personal instruments. So
you should really just play guitars. Like Sean's saying, you know, there's collector, you know, what if you have a genuine 50s Gibson, I can understand that. You know? But apart from that, you know what, play your guitars and don't worry about the resale value. Enjoy them for what they are. Don't leave them sitting in cases if you can. You know, if you don't have things like, I guess, children or dogs running around the house to knock them over. But if you can hang them on the wall, put them on a good solid guitar stand, it'll make you love them and play them even more. That's my story. That's Sean's story there. Any other words you'd like to add to convince people to take the Les Paul jump, Sean?
Actually, no. I in fact, you know, maybe we've scared them too much. I don't know, Alfie, you know, hearing some of the story that I told. But I could say that I would have done better if I would have bought brand new. But having said that, I wouldn't have made the discoveries and made the explorations that I've made had I not have been screwed by a famous retailer. So that's all I've got to say then.
I guess, you know, Sean, you've learnt a few tricks and you're not afraid to modify, change or upgrade any of your guitars now, I guess.
Exactly.
It's the positive side of all of this, you know, positive side. You got the guitar you wanted in the end and you gained some new skills. And I urge anyone out there, if you're too scared to pick up the soldering iron, don't be. It's a very, very simple thing to do. Get a low power 25-watt soldering iron. You really can't, in a guitar circuit, you really can't burn or break anything too badly. And it's very simple. It's very simple. Many wiring diagrams out there. Parts are easily obtained, relatively easily obtained. And you know, you can make an okay guitar or even a bad guitar into a fantastic guitar. I had a similar thing with Sean when I was starting to play guitar. I had guitars. I had no idea how to set a guitar up. I couldn't push the strings down. My hands weren't strong enough. They were 2 Ks off the fretboard. But and then I got it set up, and you learned a few things or two, how to set your guitars up, how to make them play the way you want to. And that's the key. I mean, I don't believe that you can take your guitar to some place to get it set up the way you want to play, because they don't know how you play. You can tell someone how you play, but you know, you can adjust things on the fly as you're playing, and then plays, like we were saying, cliche, like butter, smooth as silk, you know.
Creamy. Warm. Warm sound.
And yeah, so guys, yeah, it's fantastic. I'd like to thank my special guest, Sean Hudgels, for checking in from beautiful South Korea with his story on Les Paul. And like you're saying, it may have scared people off, but don't be scared. Don't be scared to upgrade your guitar. Don't be scared to change, and don't be scared to try a Gibson Les Paul. And a big thank you to Sean Hudgel for making himself available. Sean is from, as you heard in there, beautiful South Korea. So it was really nice to chat to Sean and record a segment for this podcast. So thank you again, Sean. So my final thoughts. What do I actually really think about Gibson Les Pauls? Well, from that interview, you probably have figured this out, but I'm converted. I think it's a really, really good guitar. The aesthetics of it don't appeal to me as much as the good old Telecaster. However, I really dig the guitar. You know, it doesn't have the refinements of a lot of guitars. And there are things that you look at that I think are completely wrong and I wonder why they did it. I'd, I'm not a big fan of the Tune-O-Matic bridge. I thought I was. It just seems to be a poor design, but it does work for people. I just don't like the way it sort of comes to the body at two small points, but hey, everyone's different. I don't like the way the headstock tilts back so far, and the angle of the neck is a little bit too extreme, but and then the strings don't come down perfectly on the nut straight, so that you will have tuning problems if you don't have a good nut cut, things like that. The towel piece, I'm not a big fan of. I'd prefer strings through the body, but you know what, it works and does the job at anchoring the strings. But in saying that, I mean, I'm just nitpicking here, because overall, I highly recommend people go out and try a Les Paul. I said at the beginning of this podcast that I put together this guitar with the intention that I may be selling it if I don't like it. I put together these parts with not exactly the parts that I would have chosen for myself. However, after playing this guitar for several months, after getting accustomed to it, it has its own personality. It has its own strengths. It has its own weaknesses. But it does serve to play a part in my collection of guitars. I only have 5 guitars now, but I can't imagine not having a Les Paul in my collection. So I'm going to keep it. I'm going to keep this guitar, and I'm going to play this guitar because I really enjoy playing the Les Paul. Yeah, it doesn't sit on your leg properly. Yes, it's a bit too heavy, and I'd probably break my back after playing a set. But there's something unique about it, something iconic, something about the nostalgia of owning a Gibson Les Paul. Owning a Gibson Les Paul has really changed my attitude. I look back and think to myself, how could I possibly have said all these negative things about the guitar? Why did I have such a bad attitude? But I guess sometimes with age, you know, you become a bit more understanding and you have more knowledge of, and you look at things in a different perspective, not in a negative way, just with one bad experience. I'm really happy that I took the plunge to purchase this guitar. I really like the guitar. I think it plays really, really well. It is quite fast. It's comfortable to play now. It did take a bit of adjusting, but now that I have got one, it is really enjoyable to play. You know, I actually, complaining about the weight, I do like the weight because it keeps it in a stable position, keeps my hands free from holding guitar into somewhat of a playing position, so I can have more control over the fretboard and my picking hand. And you know what? It may not have a tummy cut. It may not have the refinements of some of the guitars that I'm used to, but it is a damn good guitar, and I highly recommend for anyone out there thinking about getting a Les Paul to go out there, try one, go out there and get one, because I'm converted. I know a lot of people weren't expecting that. Neither was I. I thought I'd hate it. I thought I'd absolutely hate the guitar. Are they my favorite guitars? No. They're never going to beat my Benford guitar. It doesn't play as well as my Schecter guitar, my Schecter PT, and nothing plays as well. It's not going to play as well as my Ibanez RG guitar. Of course not. But it does play extremely well. And I'm picky about things. I know that. It has its own unique values, own strengths, as I said, and it's a really enjoyable experience. I highly recommend. I know I'm going to have a lot of great years playing this guitar. I'm going to get to know it a lot more. I really enjoyed setting it up. I really enjoyed putting it together. Maybe that's part of the experience. I'm big on do-it-yourself, as a lot of you guys know. And when you do a lot of your own setup, make it personal, you have a connection with the instrument. Perhaps that swayed me a little bit more to liking the guitar. But in the end, I do like the guitar and recommend it. So guys, on that note, this has been episode number 10, dedicated to the Gibson Les Paul electric guitar. Hope you guys enjoyed it. Hope you guys can understand why I'm keeping it and relate to the reasons why it is such a great guitar to play. So once you get one that works for you, it is fantastic. But again, hope you guys have a fantastic week, and I'll catch you next time. We'll be right back.
just take a moment and break the ice. So my intentions are known. See, I have pity in watching you suffer. I know the feeling of being damned alone. I've got a storybook of my own. Don't you see I am your pride? Agent of wealth, bearer of needs.
And you know it's right.
I am your wall, I'm in the strong. No need to serve on your knees. And when you're lost in the darkest of hours, take a moment and tell me